Thank you, Megan, and good afternoon, everyone. And it's Patrick, okay? And I do have a jacket, but I left it over there just in case you're wondering. And as I understand it, we've just made a quorum, so everybody has to stay or the workshop will be canceled. So nobody leaves early, okay? Now, let's see if we can figure out how to get these down. There? Okay. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Donna Lazoric and Robin Alley. That's colleagues. I think it shouldn't be co-conspirators, but Donna works for the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, and Robin Alley works for the Massachusetts Medical Society. And I did promise Donna that I would not be on my best behavior today, so beware. Just write this down if you want. That way, you don't have to worry about taking a lot of notes. My presentation is in the back. I got some extra copies up front. If you haven't picked it up, you can do so now. So if I don't see your face, I just assume you're texting somebody about dinner. Here's what I'd like to do today in, I guess, in about 15 minutes. I'm going to review some background employee immunization, which I assume most of you know, but this is for the ones who have just entered this wonderful field. Review the model that we use. We're an external agency. We're not a healthcare provider. We oversee care provided to Medicare beneficiaries in our state. So we don't work within the system. We work to try and improve systems. And the project I'll discuss today is a 12-hospital program we started a few years ago, and talk a bit about what I think are some of the keys to success. Greg Poland, as some of you may know, wrote an article about 5 years ago, and in it he stated, immunization of healthcare workers is a serious patient safety issue. That's the critical point that I hope I can get across to you today, more than anything else. Now, national rates, state rates. So anybody want to get a guesstimate as to what you think the national rates are now for employee immunization, healthcare worker immunization? 45? Do I hit 50? It had been about 46-47%. A survey done by the CDC, which I'm sure Megan is aware of, just came out about a month ago saying the current rate, this was a random sample, about 1,500 people across the country, and they came up with a rate of about 62%. So let me put it in context for you. A few years ago, if someone you love went to a healthcare facility, there were 6 chances out of 10 that the person taking care of them did not have a flu shot. Now those are only 4 chances out of 10. So every 4 people that walk into the room where your parents might be, your husband might be, 4 of them have not gotten the flu shot. That should make us feel so much better. The state rate in Massachusetts, again, we think from a recent survey, it's hovering around 50-55%. So what are those reasons people don't get a flu shot? I'm sure you've seen many of these before. You think aches and pains and fever are way underrated. You're desperate for a little sympathy. This is for the men in the audience primarily. You get thrills from having chills. You consider coughing a full body workout. And the number one excuse for not getting a flu shot, you don't really care about your health, your patients, or your family. Or more typically, I don't want one. It makes me sick. I get the flu because you can't make me. And here again, I've been looking at these reasons for probably 10 years or more. They don't seem to change. Some places have one reason more than another, but these pretty much are the ones. Except for nurses often tell me, I hear the story that nurses or docs will say, the reason they don't get a flu shot is because they're around sick people, so they're sure they've built up immunity. Don't want to know where they got their license. Okay, so around 1997, 1998, the Mass Medical Society had some money in its budget to do something about healthcare worker immunization. They came to us because they knew we were beginning to do work in this area, and I, of course, went to the Department of Public Health, and together we put together a program. The key that I see in terms of doing quality improvement in whatever kind of setting is to break a process down, a clinical process, in this case even immunization, into a series of discrete and clear steps that follow guidelines or accepted practice, bring that step in conjunction with a tool, with tools that are already available, so that individuals don't have to keep making up their own tools. It streamlines learning, makes things happen much more quickly. And more recently, in the last couple of years, it's been very clear, getting buy-in from top leaders is the most important thing, one of the most important things you can do. So this is a kit, and actually I've got copies, a few copies of this with me. You can come up and grab them. I'm not taking them back home. And I'll give you a quick overview of what's in this kit. It has five steps. The first, initiate the campaign. This, again, explains on a very simple way what are the reasons why we give flu shots, where they should begin, when, the difference between live and the dead vaccine. And most important, what we've been doing recently is getting annotated web links together. The CDC, Mass Public Health Association, our website, National Foundation, and the URL at the bottom is for the Mass Medical Society. This is online, and actually all these links are hotwired, so you can actually go directly to these links. Planning the campaign, putting a team together, assessing where you did, what you did last year, what worked, what didn't work, what could you try new this year. Get a real strong organizational commitment and begin clinic preparation. We have a checklist of things that people might want to do. Promoting the campaign, you've done probably many of these things. And again, the ones we have in the kit, we also have online. We also have the VSIs, the current VSIs, tips on operating clinics, a vaccine administration form that can be used, and a rather simple, what I think simple, declination form. I prefer the one that says, you know you can hurt or kill your patients, you know you can hurt or kill your family, you know you could die, and you still don't want to get a flu shot, sign the form. But a lot of people don't seem to like that one. Then at the end, I always ask people to celebrate success. After you've had a campaign, look at how well you've did, find out what problems you had, put that on an assessment sheet, bury it for next year, but then party a little, and make sure that senior management recognizes the work that has been done. So now I'll just briefly walk through this project that we initiated with about 14 hospitals. We sent an invitation out to all the hospitals in the state of Massachusetts. 14 agreed to participate. They had to sign a form, attend a workshop, use the kit, they participated in a conference call, and we set up a listserv for them. So we did that, and about a year or so later, I checked back in to see how well they did, and I got follow-up data from about 11 hospitals. As you can see, the facilities we worked with ranged from very small, 240 to over 6,000 employees. That was the total number of vaccine they purchased, over 17,000 doses. The percentage at this point was relatively low. The range was relatively wider than I might expect. I think now most healthcare facilities are buying, if not a sufficient supply, they're buying a pretty decent supply of vaccine, at least in Massachusetts. And all of them said they used the declination form. So as a result of this work, we had an immunization rate that went from about 51% for the participating hospitals. These are the 11, again, we had follow-up data on. And a year later, it had gone up to about 60%. And if we add on the employees that indicated they had gotten immunized out of the facility, it was up to around 63%. And I think that's a pretty accurate representation of what had happened to people who were working on our project. And I think there's also a serial effect. There has been some improvement across the board and in terms of percentage of employees that get immunized. This was 2007. Before coming down, I did survey these same hospitals again, and I got 8 of them to tell me how they're doing now, and their current rate is a little over 75%. The data is a little skewed because there was one hospital that actually got up to about 95%. Most of them were in the high 60s, low 70s, a few in the mid 70s. So what to me is important about that is the progress continues to be made. One of the best indicators of getting a flu shot is having had a flu shot. So it's just getting them once and they realize they didn't get sick, they weren't major side effects, and you usually can get them again. So what do we know then about trying to improve immunization? Easy access, actually, I've decided to change that. Stress on patient safety, that's the issue. Active leadership support, that's what we want to do. We want to get that declination forms and written policy statement from patient safety committees. They shouldn't be coming from occupational health or employee health. They surely should be coming from your patient safety committees. And here, again, it's just a review of the issues that we have been talking about. These are the steps that I think are valuable if you're going to have a successful program. Excuse me. Thank you. All right. So I'm going to walk through these very quickly because this is something which, again, I can send to you. This is what we were being told were the most important or useful things that the hospital did. Everything from convenient times, shots in cafeteria, using rolling carts, raffles, declination forms, stickers with an eye. This is one I like. All of us have these badges usually walking around. So here's the idea, is you put on there, say, a red sticker or orange or yellow, and you put a number or something on it, which indicates that that employee has had a flu shot. Then, of course, what I want you to do is to tell all the patients that if you see somebody without one of those on there, they have not gotten a flu shot. You may not want them to come in and take care of you. But just putting that on there sometimes acts as another form of incentive. Holding department leaders accountable and exporting data into Excel, the more we can make this a simple process to track employees, again, it will have a positive impact. We also know this is a classic issue around improvement of anything. Some folks can pretty much do it on their own. They don't ask for help. They figured out how to do it. Other folks, even with help, somehow can't figure out how to get better rates. And some folks find the tools, the interactions with others to be critical to their success. The problem, of course, is we don't know beforehand which category any of the individual hospitals, nursing homes, or whatever might fall in. So we did ask them what the most important key to their success was, and we thought it would be, you know, our wonderful kit that we just love and the conference calls that, no. This was so important for us to be reminded of, collaborating with other hospitals, hearing what others did, hearing how others overcame barriers, they told me were the most critical thing to their success. And that reaffirms the importance of, even if you're in one facility, if you can work with multiple facilities on a problem like employee immunization, you're more likely to get better results. And so as an external agency, what we try and do is to create a structure to foster collaboration. It is sometimes referred to as a community of practice, where people are comfortable to exchange ideas, exchange information, exchange forms and processes that they've put in place. That's my information again. Now, I've got 2 minutes, I think, I hope. So I'm just going to do this, all right? And if you ask, somebody asks you later, it wasn't me, it was someone else. Last year, Dr. Frieden had said that last year was not the right time for mandating healthcare workers to get a flu shot. And he was probably right. As many of you know, the seasonal flu vaccine ran out at some point and never came back. But at the same time, Arthur Kaplan at the University of Pennsylvania, and I'll just read this. I remember he said that, not me. Enough already with the whining and the moaning and the demonstrating, the protesting of healthcare workers. Healthcare workers ought to be required to get a flu shot or find another line of work. This is another alternative. This was a doll put together by Native Americans in Northwest during 1918 to ward off the effects of the flu. That may work as much as I'm sure I've got immunity built up. So this is an older alternative. I'm just offering it to you. In that same article, Craig Poland states, healthcare personnel and healthcare systems have an ethical and moral duty. Why don't we talk about that more? We have to protect our patients. We can't protect them if people don't get immunized. So the future, mandatory immunizations. I believe there's a session later in the conference that's going to be talking specifically about this. It has already started. Virginia Mason was one of the first, and now there are about at least 32 facilities listed on immunize.org that identifies facilities across the country that have put in place a mandatory requirement. And I just found out maybe about 2 or 3 weeks ago, the Healthcare Corporation of America made it mandatory for all of their facilities and reported about a 95% immunization rate. And as far as I know, that's not a government agency, that is a for-profit corporation, so it wasn't big government doing something. That was very nice. If we can't go that far yet, here's something, again, I've I suggest to the CDC and others, we need a common definition of what a healthcare worker is. If I were to ask you, we know about full-time and part-time workers. So if you're doing a survey of your facility, do you include volunteers, community docs, per diem? Who are included in the tabulation of the denominator as to who an employee is? And I don't think that's it. So as soon as you start hearing various rates, be very careful, try and understand what that rate is based on. Mandatory public reporting is being begun in Massachusetts, and I think this can be another useful tool. We do this a lot with quality improvement works. I don't think it affects the way the public is going to react, but CEOs, administrators do not want to see the name of their hospital, nursing home, home health agency at the bottom of a list in terms of employee immunizations. It can be very effective. And this year at our annual conference we're holding next month, we are going to recognize all the healthcare providers in the state that we can find that have an immunization rate of 90% or more. And I'm going to do this annually, again, as a way not just of recognizing them, but I want them to put a plaque right in their buildings to say to others, this is what we've been able to achieve. You now have a benchmark that others need to reach for. And changing the culture. If somebody were walking in your office today smoking, I would wonder what your reaction would be aside from, oh my God. 20 years ago, you might have said, you need an ashtray. We have changed the culture. We can change the culture around this issue. Even when you mandate it, we still have to work on changing the attitudes that people have. The alternative is lawsuits, and that is where we don't want to go. We just want to get people's attention. There is a story of an Irishman who got married, took his bride home on his donkey, and the donkey kept stopping. So one time, the old Irishman picked up a stick and hit the donkey on the side of the head, and his new bride got very upset with him. Said, I thought you were a kind and gentle man. I thought you loved animals. And he said, I do, darling. I was just getting his attention. Lawsuits get people's attention, but I hope we don't have to go that far. Okay, I'm done. Thank you.